The unruffled beat of Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch means it's Thursday, 10 p.m. It is time for So What's Your Story, the coolest place on your dial because it's the only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling right here on listener-sponsored 90.1 KPFT Houston. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, professor of communication at the University of Houston downtown, along with the essential Shannon McCurchy and someone else we're going to introduce you to in just a little while. You know, the period between Labor Day and New Year's Day is no more than a few ticks on the clock, so it seems, and it's a stretch designated to celebration. It shouldn't be the only time of year we commit to remembering others, count our blessings, and render gestures of the heart. But for most of us, it is the interim devoted to reflection and renewal. And the most popular topics among tellers on this program is reflection of family. However, my guest this evening blends the soul of family connection with the insights of self-discovery to produce an illuminating and refreshing take on family. From a very young age, psychotherapist Dr. Michael Winters has been observing human interaction with great interest, and being one of 14 children gave him plenty of subjects to watch. Fueled by his curiosity about the human experience, Michael was born in Tennessee. He majored in psychology and speech communication at Western Kentucky and earned his PhD in counseling psych from the University of Memphis. He began at Rice University as a staff psychologist and ultimately named the director of the counseling center. Currently, he's in private practice, and Dr. Winters specializes in logotherapy. It's a school of psychotherapy developed by Austrian neurologist and psychiatrist and Holocaust survivor Viktor Frankl, author of life-changing piece, Man's Search for Meaning. Logotherapy emphasizes the importance in finding meaning in life in all circumstances. Michael also finds meaning in storytelling, and he's good at it. Very good at it. He's a Story Slam winner at the Moth in May of 2015, and it is a pleasure to have him in the studio at this very moment. Michael, thank you very much for being here.
It's great to be here.
And I love talking to you earlier, and you're from Tennessee, and as I mentioned earlier, that's a storytelling state. You didn't even know that.
I didn't.
The National Storytelling Network was... Oh, my gosh, they were located there for seemingly centuries, but I think it was a few decades. Now they moved to Kansas City, and they just do great, great things. And we've had a lot of folks on from Tennessee and who've talked about tellers from Tennessee and Kentucky, and I always find it unfathomable how many there are because I'm pretty shocked myself. But you are one of 14 kids.
Yes.
What number are you?
Well, let me answer that by giving you my Star Trek name.
Right. Can you count
I'm 9 of 14.
9 of 14.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. But I'm a twin.
Yeah.
And I was born 15 minutes earlier than my sister, so I was the baby of the family for the shortest amount of time.
Wow. Now, is there anything significant about being the 9th out of 14? I mean, we know there's something significant about being a middle child, a last child, a first child, but the 9th? Out of 14.
Well, if you are the 9th of 14, then it's highly significant.
It is very significant.
So for me, it's significant.
Yeah.
But
I mean,
I'm halfway. We kind of had waves.
The oldest sibling is how old?
Well, let's see. He's 20 years younger than my mom, and he's 20 years older than my youngest sister, and I'm 5 years older than her.
30-minute show.
Okay,
Michael.
So... He's in his 60s.
Wow. Old, like me. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Yeah, it all came to he's really old like you. Wow. Now, family is the core of tonight's stories, and we're going to get to them in a moment. But let's talk about logotherapy for a moment. I hope I was accurate in my description.
Yes, Kind of.
But referring to a Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning as being life-changing is no hyperbole. Now you know why, because I shared a little bit of my own experience base outside, and I wanted to know what prompted you to specialize in logotherapy, and you shared that quick story with us, with me, and I'd like you to share it with the listeners.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so I was in graduate school, and, you know, throughout undergrad and graduate school, I never heard Viktor Frankl's name mentioned. but kind of a nerd. On a Friday night, I was in the bookstore in the psychology section where I would hang out, and there I found Man's Search for Meaning, and it was like, wow, this is the book that I'm supposed to read. So I got it and you know, took it home and stayed up till 2 a.m. and read it and was like, wow, this is powerful. But this is, you know, pre-internet, pre-Google. So after I read it, that was it. And then when I had moved to, you know, I'd finished school, finished master's, doctorate, moved to Houston, and got by chance a flyer in the mail that said, if you're a counselor looking to learn more about Viktor Frankl, then come to this program. And came and started doing more and more. And the headquarters for logotherapy around the world is in Abilene, Texas.
And it is more of a mindset. It's more of an attitude.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. You, shifting for just a moment, I had asked you before, and I'm always fascinated by moth tellers, but what inspired you to tell a story at the moth for the first time?
Well, a friend of mine said, hey, you know, you ought to come out to this story. And I'd heard it on the radio, and it was like, oh, I didn't know they had that in Houston. Yeah, come out and tell a story. So I was like, oh, okay. And, you know, told me about a week in advance. And I said, okay, I'll go down and do that. And, you know, went and heard the first story and thought, oh, that's so much better than mine. And then, oh, no, right. I hope they don't draw my name. And then, right. You know, when I got up there, it felt natural and fun, and people seemed to appreciate it.
It's a strange experience. You can't see anything.
Right,
You can't see a thing. And you're being judged. And, mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of a dilemma, being judged on storytelling. But nevertheless, yep. The criteria are clear. But it is. It's a difficult a very challenging and very rewarding experience. And if you've never done it, it's tough to describe. It is. You can't see anybody there. Mm-hmm. You have to anticipate the emotions. You mm-hmm. see no faces. The lights are overwhelming.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. But you won the Grand Slam, and that's not a big deal. It's a huge deal, actually. And the theme that was echoed that night was chemistry. Mm-hmm. And your first story is the story that you told, correct?
Yes.
It's the chemistry in relationships. And I have heard the story on YouTube, and I heard it on your site, and I love the story.
Okay.
Please share that with us.
All right. Mrs. Burns, my fifth grade teacher, was very easily exasperated by me. For example, in teaching English, she was telling the difference between lie and lay. Lie is what a living thing does, and lay is what an inanimate object. So, for example, tell the dog to lie down, lay the book on the table. Well, I was enthusiastic. Ms. Burns, what about a potted plant? A potted plant is alive, but you have to lay it down. Oh, she got so exasperated with me. She took the chalkboard eraser and threw it up almost to the ceiling, and it hit a steam pipe. Almost at the ceiling, and there was a chalk dust print on that steam pipe for the rest of the year. But in science, she was ready for me. She got me. She was talking about the difference between a chemical change and a physical change. A physical change, like mixing salt and sugar, could be undone, but if you bake a cake, that's a chemical change. It can't be undone. Mrs. Burns, how do you unmix salt and sugar? Well, she was up to the task. She got a microscopic projector that could project onto the wall the salt and sugar crystals. So when projected in a large size, we could see that they were different. And so that we knew that if you had a microscopic projector and a toothpick and enough time, you could indeed unmix the salt and sugar. Well, many years go by. I grow up. I become a psychologist and a marriage counselor. And I see people now that think that their relationships are chemical changes, but they're really physical changes. And if they go through divorce proceedings and they hire attorneys, you know, they don't even need a toothpick. They can find a way to say what's yours and what's theirs if there's any money left by the time the attorney's finished. But people come to me as a therapist, and they have a mistaken idea of what I do. They come to me thinking that I'm going to judge who is right in the relationship or who the sane person is. But I'm not a judge. I help people bake. So, you know, when that happens, when we see people that can really bake and connect together, there's a real change that happens. I call it we-ness as opposed to me-ness focusing on me or you-ness focusing just on you. And that we-ness is a very powerful quality. And a lot of times when others see a couple with that, they're really kind of jealous. Yes, we-ness envy is real. So, you know, this we-ness, in my own relationship with Kelly, who's here with me tonight in the studio, it didn't just happen. It happened over time. I remember, you know, when we first met, our first date, she was wearing this beautiful navy dress and a very tasteful, just a little bit of cleavage showing. And you know, it had this crystal necklace. It was right above that cleavage. And I was trying not to stare at her cleavage, but that crystal necklace hypnotized me. So I just kind of had to look there. But you know, that wasn't when we really formed that chemical connection. And it wasn't on our honeymoon either, when we kind of spontaneously decided to get married and just drive down to Galveston. This was right before the 4th of July, and we thought we'll just get a hotel on the beach. And we'd go to Hotel Galvez, and they're like, well, do you have a reservation? No, we thought we are completely booked. Okay, well, we drove to three more hotels, and there was nothing there. And finally, somebody told us, it's going to be a miracle if you find a room on the beach tonight. So we were kind of dejected, almost ready to drive back to Houston. But we thought, okay, we'll stop at this one last place, kind of dingy motel. But they had not only one, but two rooms available, which meant that our daughters who were with us could spend the night on our honeymoon in a separate room for us. So that was pretty special for everybody. But the next morning, we got up and there a flyer for a church had blown up against our car tire in the night, and it said, miracles happen. So maybe that was a miracle, but that wasn't the chemistry either. That wasn't when we really got baked together. You know, we've been together for over 20 years, and we still get angry. We still get frustrated with each other at times. But we don't ever think about leaving the relationship because we have this quality that says, whatever it is, we're going to get over it. So, you know, I really thank Mrs. Burns for teaching me about chemistry, and I thank Kelly for baking with me.
A beautiful story. Thank you. That's a beautiful story.
Thank you.
I'm curious, and I don't know if you can respond to this, but when we take a look at a we-ness couple, mm-hmm. how do we know if we see one? What are some characteristics?
Well, you can't always tell. You know, Kelly and I had this mentor couple that we had when we were, you know, early in our relationship. Mm-hmm. We thought we want to be like them
right.
until we later found out that the husband had this long affair and all this kind of stuff. So you can't really tell. But there's times when you just get a sense of a couple that just kind of really just feels at ease and feels connected and committed. Really, it's commitment, committed to each other, whether they're frustrated or upset or not. I mean, I think a lot of times they're kind of like playing with each other and picking at each other a little bit.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of playfulness, but there's not a vindictiveness.
Right. Yeah. I really do know what you mean by weakness. My wife and I have, and hope she's listening because, you know, I'm saying something nice. Okay, but I think we-ness is very real. I do. Mm-hmm. And I don't know about it nearly as much as you do, but I love the way that you describe it. It's a very descriptive image. Mm-hmm. And you're right. When you see other people who have it,
mm-hmm.
it's not a matter of putting it into words. You just kind of know it, you see it.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes you jealous if you don't have it.
Yep.
It makes you envious
because
you really do like it. You really do. Now, I'm being the intellect that I am. I always do my homework, as all of you know, and I just wanted to make very clear that I know that there is a very important, inextricable relationship between excellent relationships and humor.
Mm-hmm.
And with that in mind, I've identified some knock-knock family jokes.
Okay.
So these are important. And you can use these in your own practice.
Okay.
Now, this is an interactive exercise. All of you know how to do knock-knock, right? Mm-hmm. So, for example, knock-knock.
Who's there?
Everybody? Very good. Thank you. You guys have no idea what you're doing way back there. Okay. Who's there? Nana.
Nana who?
Nana your business. Knock-knock.
Who's there?
Mom and Dad.
Mom and Dad who?
Exactly, because you're adopted. Okay. Knock-knock.
Who's there?
Old lady.
Old lady who?
I didn't know you could yodel. And one more for your listening pleasure. See, they're pretty funny.
Yeah,
you're laughing, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
I mean, that's a genuine laugh.
Yep.
Right?
I mean,
I'm not paying this man to laugh. He's laughing. Okay. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Your niece.
Your niece who?
Your niece who can't reach the doorbell. Hey, very good. Okay. I know they're groaners, but I had to share them anyway because this is Hank Rubicek with Shannon McCurchy, and you are listening to guest storyteller Dr. Michael Winters on So What's Your Story? Always live and only on 90.1 FM KPFT Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 90.3 in Livingston, or kpft.org if you're listening online, in line, out of line, or even if you're in a lineup. I'm glad you're here. Nothing but good will happen to you if you develop your storytelling skills with the very best storytelling group around, our proud sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild. Story swaps are held on the third Tuesday of every month from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Multi-Service Center at 1475 West Gray. Please check out our site at www.houstonstorytellers.org for events, fun happenings, and so much more. And please be sure to visit our So What's Your Story Facebook page where, thanks to Shannon, everything is coming up story. Shannon, tell us what you post, please.
Well, I post about storytellers each week that grace our studio, about events around town, as well as articles about all things storytelling, such as 4 steps to becoming a better storyteller, becoming better at storytelling, and stunning conversations on the power of story, and oh, so much more.
Great. Thank you, Shannon.
You're welcome.
The Jewish high holidays are around the corner, and to welcome Rosh Hashanah, because that's a good holiday to celebrate. Yom Kippur is depressing. Andy Goss will be here next week to tell stories from the mythical land of Chelm, where everyone's a fool. And what else can you tell us about Andy?
I am so ready to see Andy again here. He is a great guy. He's an attorney here, a trial attorney here in Houston.
But he's still a great guy.
Oh, yes, yes. That isn't, we don't measure the person by their profession.
Well,
okay. We try not to.
Sure.
Come on.
Yeah, whatever
come
you
on.
Say.
It's,
sure.
It's personality. And he's been here in Houston for a long time, but he has this wonderful New York accent and the personality to boot. So you'll love him.
Yeah.
Tune in next week and enjoy.
Also, he's the president of the Houston Storytellers Guild. He's going to be talking a little bit about how to get involved. And next week also, we have our fun drive, so we'll be talking a little bit about the real power of story in the community. If you've got any questions about storytelling, program ideas, would like to be a guest on this program or recommend someone else as a guest, please send me an email to drhank@kpft.org and I will get back to you. I want to talk about Shannon for a moment, the hardest working intern known to humankind. She's overworked, working days, nights, weekends, at gigs, in closets, under desks, on ceilings, all over the place. You get the idea. And next week is going to be Shannon's last week on this program, but it doesn't mean that she's not a part of this program. The essential Shannon McCurchy will always and forever be loved. But Jake Reiner will be on the boards. Jake, are you excited? Thank you very much. We just wanted to make sure that we acknowledge it. No, Jake, are you excited?
I'm extremely excited for the opportunity.
That was a very well-spoken sentence. I think we'll keep him, you know.
Thank you.
Yeah, a little more animation, but you're doing fine. Very fine. Michael, your second story is about grandparents, and in particular, your grandfather and Christmas. And an unknown author once claimed that most of us know very well grandparents are a delightful blend of laughter, caring deeds, wonderful stories, and love. And I think what you're about to share confirms that claim. Mm-hmm. Tell us your story.
Well, this is my grandfather's story. So this is about a Christmas over 100 years ago in rural Tennessee. And things were a little different back then. So on Christmas Eve, they got out of school at noon so they could go to the store, the one store, and do their shopping. And my grandfather was a little kid at this time. Usually they walked to school, but this time his older brother had hooked up the mule to take the buggy so that they could get home before dark. So all day long, he was sitting in school with his hand around his Christmas money, just waiting to go. And finally, they let school out. They went to the store, the one general store in Adams, Tennessee. And he said, you know, just imagine all of the toys and candy in the world piled up in one place. And that's what he experienced in the general store there. It was just amazing, overwhelming. And he just stood there with his mouth open until finally somebody came over and offered to help him. So he had to get gifts for a sister, two brothers, and his mom. And he had a dime. And he was able to do all of that gift buying for his mom, a nickel gift for her, and a penny each for brothers and sister, and still had a penny left to get himself something. So then they took the mule cart home, and it was pretty cold, but he said he just felt really warm knowing, you know, Christmas, this is what it was all about. Not much fanfare, but they had, you know, a beautiful time there. And they get home, and they exchange the gifts, and they didn't wrap them back in those days. They just exchanged them, and then they'd go to bed. And at night, they didn't have fancy stockings, but they would have a woolen sock that was hung by the chimney. And in the morning, there would be nuts and apples and oranges and maybe a piece of peppermint stick candy. But that was just amazing stuff. And what they would do, because they usually had one orange a year, is they would keep the rind, keep the orange skin, put it on a string, and put it behind the stove. And then every so often, you'd go and you'd pinch off just a tiny piece of that orange peel and chew it so that you could taste Christmas all year long.
Wow. That's a beautiful story.
Yeah.
That is a beautiful, beautiful story. This one really unfolded as you told it.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching it. It really unfolded. How many times have you told this story?
How many times have I told that story?
20, 30, 1,000.
How many times have I heard it versus telling it?
Telling it. No, I know you've heard it, but how many times have you told it?
I don't think I've told it before.
Really?
No.
Kidding.
Yeah.
No,
I mean, my siblings all know it.
Yeah.
Because Granddaddy would tell it to us. You know, he'd mm-hmm. gather us around and he would tell us the story.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's, I think, part of the story for me is being able to hold on to that, because, you know, he's long gone.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, it's such a powerful image. You know, one year I made some candied orange peel to give to siblings, you know, because it was, you know, just this image of how powerful, you know, they didn't have much.
Right.
But it was still it was the spirit of Christmas, even if they didn't have a whole lot of material things.
Right. Yeah. What was your favorite gift?
Oh, gosh, my favorite gift. You know what? I'm not going to answer your question, but I'm going to tell you a better story.
Okay.
Christmas with 14 kids is just an amazing scene. It's amazing experience. It's not a gift. It's the experience of it. As you know, my parents have this old Victorian house. It's you know, Christmas presents halfway out in the living room under a tree. It was always a cedar tree. My dad brought home a pine one year, and my mom wouldn't have it, so it was always a cedar tree. It filled the house with the smell, and it was just powerful to be there at Christmas and just the tradition.
Yeah.
And that's maybe, you know, we were talking about what is it like in a family of 14. That's a very special time.
When I think about that kind of a gathering, I think about the Nutcracker, and I think about all of the kids who are gathered mm-hmm. around the tree at the beginning of
mm-hmm.
the ballet.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You've seen it. And it's not the same thing, I know, but there's just so much tumultuous, wonderful tumult going on, and there's a good kind of chaos. Mm-hmm. It's disorganized, but yet it's not. Mm-hmm. It's dynamic, but yet it's structured. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to describe, and I haven't been in many situations where I've had an awful lot of people in my family together, but the few times that I can recall, they've really been the best moments mm-hmm. of my life. They have. Mm-hmm. So I don't entirely know what you're thinking when you're thinking about how a gathering like that can be a gift, but I can come close. Mm-hmm. And that's a wonderful, wonderful thought. Thank you. You know, grandchildren really are the dots that connect generations. Mm-hmm. It's a note that I wanted to mention here, because I think that grandparents are such anchors in storytelling. And I know mm-hmm. that your grandfather was really mm-hmm. the consummate storyteller, mm-hmm. right? I mean, he was the storyteller
yep. yes,
in your
he
home.
Was.
And
mm-hmm.
we're going to ask you about that in just a moment. But tell us, just in a sentence or so, what you want us to learn from your two marvelous stories. There's a connection. There's a link.
Yeah, and even back into the whole meaning piece with Viktor Frankl mm-hmm. is that, you know, family, how we remember family really is through story, is through our experiences, and really tying those together and being able to kind of anchor those. I mean, who are we? What are our lives about? Mm-hmm. It's the stories. It's the things that we remember that are that make our lives.
They really are. It's just... when we think about stories, really do validate our lives. Mm-hmm. They do, and I think that's probably what
to give
I
coherence,
say.
Purpose,
they
meaning.
Coherence.
It's yeah.
And we are born a blank page, and mm-hmm. from that point on, our lives are our stories, and our story mm-hmm. is our life. You are enjoying guest storyteller, psychologist Michael Winters, only on 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. Mike, you know, I know that you. I want to talk about healing, but I know that you're going to be teaching a course at the Jung Center. People mm-hmm. can look you up. Yeah. I know that you'll be teaching continuing at Rice University, and yes. I encourage mm-hmm. people to please, please look you up, because you're a fascinating, fascinating man. Your grandfather was a great storyteller. Mm-hmm. What are the kinds of stories that he told you? What are your favorite stories? I really would like to hear this. What were some of your favorite stories growing up?
Well, the things that really brought his life into perspective, and you know, it was so amazing the things that we thought you had to have to live that they didn't have at all, and the ability to get a sense of what it was like to live through his experience it was an expression of love.
Yeah. Sharing and listening to stories about our families can help us become healthier emotional beings. We learn about our seeds and our nuclei, our destinies. We reconcile, resurrect, and refine in order to validate our lives. Thank you, Dr. Michael Winters. We are reminded that we are a part of something thanks to you. You are invigorating with your wit, your wisdom, and profound parables of the magic of love. Stories from Chelm and La Fall Fun Drive next week. Scooter is up next with The Inner Side to complete the backside of this Power Hour on KPFT. Make 90.1 a part of every day, and while you're driving home, just turning in for the night or just relaxing, join us every Thursday at 10 p.m. for So What's Your Story and ease into the weekend right. You keep loving a great story, and I'm going to keep bringing them to you. Be good to each other. Till next week, I'm Dr. Hank, reminding you that it is never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.